This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, everybody. Listen, it's time for the Burning Platform, which is brought to you by Nando's. Now, I don't know if you know about this, but Nando's have just, in time for spring, launched a deliciously refreshing line of frosted drinks. How does that sound? Ooh. Which could keep you and should keep you cool under the collar as temperatures start to go up. Nando's new exclusive range of frosted drinks come in two delicious, cheeky flavors. You get strawberry limeade and wicked lemonade. Perfectly complement the delicious flavor of their peri peri chicken. With a crushed, smooth, refreshing consistency, it could be described as the lip-smacking premium slush that is a delicious thirst quencher. At just R24.90, you have no reason to not make it the perfect partner to any Nando's flame-grilled peri-peri meal, whether you're dining in or you're taking it away. Isn't that exciting?
Yep.
New products at Nando's. Oof. So go and try out their new thirst quenchers. Tell me what you think of them, and you could go and get them from today. Special birthday release. You know Nando's are turning 30 years old, right? The first Nando's was opened in 1987 in Johannesburg by Robbie Brosen and Fernando Duarte. Nando, that's where Nando comes from. All Nando's peri peri chickens marinated for 24 hours, locally sourced, never frozen, ensuring that you get the finest flavors. That's Nando's. Let's get to Justice Malala and see what's going on in the Burning Platform. Justice Malala is here. It is time for the Burning Platform, which is brought to you by Nando's. Every week we check in on the stories that make South Africa tick. And as usual, Justice, there's such a short supply of outrageous political nonsense.
Gareth, you wouldn't believe it, eh? I feel we need more. Jeepers. I can't keep up. I just can't keep up with what's happening. You know, when you think about Wednesday evening, you and I were in touch. I was sending you what we should talk about and so forth. And at 9:36 p.m., you have Bloomberg, the news agency, running this story, yeah, that the Hawks have asked Trevor Manuel and Jabu Moleketi, who are former finance minister and deputy minister, to give them affidavits about that rogue unit that has given us so much stuff.
What is the Hawks' obsession with this rogue unit? What do we know they were intended to do, and what were they not meant to do that the Hawks are so concerned about?
You know, I'm not a lawyer or I don't work for the NPA, but I can tell you this case is going to fall apart even before it starts. It's going to be exactly what happened last year when Pravin Gordhan was charged with giving one of his employees early retirement. Something that the Hawks didn't realize happens to 3,000 state employees every year. It's absolutely within the books, and the thing collapsed, and Sean the Sheep, Sean Abrahams, had to have that press conference in which it took him 1 hour to say, I made a mistake. We shouldn't even have started this investigation, let alone charge the man. Anyway, what happened was that there was a meeting way back in the early 2000s held in Mafikeng. It was a meeting of ministers who had some intelligence capability, and ministers and civil servants like Pravin Gordhan, who was the head of the revenue service at the time. And it said, we should think about bringing together all these arms of intelligence so that we all work together. Well, then they took a resolution that, okay, let's all go and start some intelligence gathering capacity specific to our fields. So if there's intelligence needed around, let's say, if tobacco companies are colluding not to pay tax, then the guys at sales can do that. So this is how this thing was started.
It sounds legitimate.
Governments
all over the world are obsessed with making sure that they drain and they squeeze every penny
exactly
out of it. So this is not unusual.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, so that's how it started. It seems as if the Hawks suddenly woke up and said, no, we've got to do this. Now, South Africans have followed the almost persecution, I think, of Pravin Gordhan over the past few years. As firstly, his record in SARS, which used to take a lot of money from a lot of people, was pummeled. And then after that, attempts to do all sorts of to him when he was at the finance ministry. And I think that what we're seeing here is a new trend. For our listeners who follow trends and try to build something out of it, for me, there's a trend, and it happened on August 8. On August 8, Jacob Zuma wins narrowly the vote, defeats the vote of no confidence against him in parliament. It's 198 to 177. 198 ANC MPs voted for Zuma to stay. 177 opposition and ANC members voted for him to leave. Now, the opposition needed only 200 plus one, so 201 members to vote, and he'd have been out. Since then, there's been a witch hunt, if you will. The ANC is asking, there are between 26 and 40 ANC MPs who could have voted, who voted against Jacob Zuma. Mm. Who are they? How dare they? Remember that the ANC has 249 members of parliament, only 198. So there's 51 ANC MPs
who are suspicious.
Who everyone's looking, saying that Gareth is looking at me funny. So something is going on here. And so since then, there's been a witch hunt going on. So people like Makosi Khoza, Pravin Gordhan, Derek Anekom, Mondli Gungubele, who've said publicly, plus all the others who haven't said publicly. So let's say it's 26, the minimum number of ANC MPs who voted against Zuma. So there's 22 plus those four. And then it's, where are they? Who are they? Everyone.
And this must be keeping the president up at night. Because
keeping them up at night.
He likes to know. He's an intelligence man from years ago. This must be driving him crazy.
Absolutely. So then, those who have spoken, Makosi Khoza is being charged by the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal, plus action has been taken against her in parliament. They've demoted her. Derek Anekom has been asked to respond why he shouldn't be fired as the head of discipline. Mondli Gungubele is being attacked by some of his comrades publicly. Pravin Gordhan, let's take out file X and see what's going on.
All right, but this was such an embarrassment to Shaun the Sheep before. Any other NPA head would have resigned after such an embarrassment, but we can't find him, so he may as well have resigned. But now this has all been reinstated. So yeah. Clearly, and does it coincide? Because I do think it's suspicious that this has come at the same time that Edward and Duduzane Zuma are busy speaking out. Do you think the two are linked?
I think that's a very clear link. I think that both Duduzane and Edward Zuma, who, by the way, are not elected officials, they're just the sons of. But are suddenly very deep in ANC politics and saying all kinds of things. But anyway, I think that the link is that they were told that, no, we've got something on him now. Mm. And they are feeling emboldened. They are feeling that they can... they can speak out and that they will have some legal leg to stand on. And the Hawks investigation, by the way, the Hawks are saying, no, this has got nothing to do with Pravin Gordhan, absolutely nothing. Now, you know, if I was, if I didn't live in South Africa the past year and a half, when they said exactly the same things about Pravin last year, I'd say, oh, our institutions are being honest and upstanding. But I can tell you now, this has absolutely everything to do with Pravin Gordhan. It seems to me, given if you read Pravin Gordhan's, Duduzane Zuma's open letter to Pravin Gordhan, that what Pravin Gordhan set off while he was at Treasury, the attempts to stop the rampant looting that we now know is happening via the, you know, Gupta leaked emails,
which they still claim is nonsense.
Yeah, they claim it's nonsense, but they've been corroborated so many times by so many different people. It's not even worth that what they are saying is utter nonsense. But it is very clear that the family, that their allies, the Zumas, are feeling the heat.
Mm.
They're feeling the heat and they're trying to fight back. That fight back is going to be dirty, and it's going to dirty the ANC's politics, particularly over the next 4 months up to December 2014. You're going to see even more push, more dirty tricks. I think that
smears,
there will be many smears. If you think about it, the other day I was speaking to Thandi Modise,
mm-hmm.
Who was a very big Jacob Zuma acolyte when she stood with him and became deputy general secretary of the ANC in Polokwane. And we were just laughing about what's the latest intelligence report saying, and it was interesting that before every conference there's some intelligence report leaked and this and so forth. So we're going to see more and more of those things. We're going to see a lot more of the dirty tricks that we've seen.
What do you think Thandi Modise is thinking at the moment? Where do you think she sits?
Oh, no, I think she's going to announce at some point that she also wants to be president with a vain hope that someone will pick her up as a more junior, but as a running partner. To your question, think about it. Who is in this race? Mathews Posa? Lovely guy. Does he have a chance?
Not a chance.
Uh-huh. Jeff Radebe? Lovely guy.
No, and proved through that ugly scandal that he was smeared with that he actually does have a backbone, despite everyone's belief to the contrary.
Indeed.
So, could have been a nice guy, but not a chance.
So
Lindiwe Sisulu?
Talks a lot, talks a good game, but you know what?
Not a chance.
Not a chance.
Balega Mbete.
I mean, you know when Julius Malema stood up in Parliament and said, "We know you slaughtered a cow." Mm. Jacob Zuma told you that you are his woman candidate.
Mm.
I think that was the final nail in the coffin. I don't think that it's going anywhere. She's been pushed forward by about three branches of the ANC in the Eastern Cape.
So also not a chance.
Not a chance.
That leaves us with Cyril Nkosazana.
Yeah.
She made all kinds of speeches this week. You know, it's been Women's Month, which has been a terrific opportunity for her to grandstand.
Very.
She's having difficulty, though.
She's having difficulty. There are two difficulties that she faces. First of all, you know, Gareth, if you are going to say, I'm going to be president, I would like you to tell me what you're going to do about 27% unemployment, 30.4 million people living below the poverty line. You know, there are
17 million on welfare.
Exactly. 17 million. More people are on welfare than are working in this country.
And we're relying on those working people to pay for those people.
Exactly.
On welfare.
I'd like you to have a platform. So when you stand up and all you ever talk about is white monopoly capital,
women in power. That was a bit...
Exactly. And we say, but how? Because you know what? We need a president. We need a woman president, but we need a president who will solve the problems of the country. So her big problem is that her plank is the Jacob Zuma plank. It's basically Jacob Zuma goes and says we need radical economic transformation. She goes and says at Gibbs, we need radical economic transformation. In fact, she turns around at Gibbs. She gave the speech, and in the speech, she mentions radical economic transformation 6 times. In her notes, in her standing up speech, she doesn't mention it. Why? Because here is a school that teaches you how to be WMC or BMC, Black Monopoly Capital. So she's speaking not truth to power, but to who's listening to me now, and it sounds very popular. Her second thing is that her campaign or her support base is falling apart. Colin Maine has grandstanded about her being the next president of the ANC. Well, he's fighting with the Supra Mahuma Pelo, the premier of the Northwest. How are they working together on this campaign? I noticed that Colin Maina has gone very quiet on the Armed for Nkosazana front. So that's a little something. In the Free State, Thabo Manyoni is standing up against Ace Magashule. It means that the Free State province could be split. In Mpumalanga, we've spoken about this before on the show.
Didi Mabuza
is saying, you think Nkosazana will win the election in 2019? I don't want to be part of the train that's going to be in the opposition benches. So suddenly he's casting around for someone. You saw him last week meeting with the ANC in Gauteng. Plus, KwaZulu-Natal has its own problems with divisions. So that campaign is not looking as hot as it used to be. Yeah, it's decidedly on the back foot.
So maybe Cyril was clever to just bide his time. We all thought he was just sitting on his hands. He was, you know.
Maybe he was.
Tongue-tied, compromised. Mm. Maybe he is all those things, and he still will win because he's just prepared to wait.
I think. Look, I mean, he does wait. The key thing is to know when to strike, and he. You know, it was interesting on Sunday. He was in Polokwane, and it was very clear the ANC Women's League in Polokwane came out very clearly that that's our guy, and not anyone else. Kosatu there was very clear, and it was a campaign rally It was a campaign rally inside the ANC, but he made the point, and Lindiwe Sisulu has made the point. It is clear now that the Jacob Zuma faction doesn't have the numbers that it thought it had. But the key will be, will they try corruption to steal the election from Ramaphosa? That now, he's mentioned it about people being paid money, people being paid to vote in certain ways to block delegates from arriving, getting into the conference and so forth. And I think that is the next big battle and the next big challenge for the ANC. So the actual integrity of that election is going to be a very interesting one.
Now we should really divide the Burning Platform into three parts: actual news, succession debate news, and parastatal
we
news.
We should actually,
because parastatal news, there's always some new disaster. And we were talking about SAA quite broadly last week, but there are more details surfacing every week about what a disaster that is. Yeah. Now I see it's not just SA, it's SA Express as well.
Yes.
They also have no money.
Yeah.
They also, I saw the guy, I can't remember his name, one of the DA guys, say to the CEO of SA Express, "You should resign. You're not very good at this." And the guy just sat there and looked at him.
No.
Like he didn't even have an answer. Because he's right.
Yeah, he's right. But can I tell you, you know, I think your instincts are slightly better than mine on this. I sometimes think, oh, it will take time for disaster to happen. That, you know, you can take time. And I'm starting to question that a bit because, you know, you've just mentioned SA Express now, and I hadn't thought about it properly. But now, there was a lady at SA Express. Her name was Sizam Zimela. Sizam Zimela was interesting because she ran that thing, and it made a profit.
That's right.
So in the
she was also the acting CEO of SAA for a while.
For about 2 months. Yeah. Then our friend Dudu thought,
back in.
Why are you working? This is not good. We don't encourage that.
We don't encourage profit and success here. Encourage failure, mediocrity, or less.
Exactly. What are you doing? Stop that now.
All right.
So Sizam Zimela started. Wrote that thing. Ran that thing. SA Express, and it made a profit. So in among Mango SA Express and SAA, these guys made money. She was so good, that's why they asked her to go run SAA. And then after 2 months, they realized that she believes in corporate governance, in controls, in
honesty.
Systems, honesty. Don't do that now.
That doesn't go well.
And she left, and she went on to try. She tried to start her own airline. I don't think it worked out. And I hope she goes back and starts another one, because I think she's amazing. But it happened so quickly between Siza Mzimela leaving SA Express and what you see now. From being a well-run, successful business to this. And it's an incredible thing. But the point I wanted to make about all these state-owned entities, Gareth, is that we have a problem here. At Eskom, you have a situation where the executives there lied in public to the Business Day, to other media, that no, these payments to Trillion and McKinsey were all above board. We all agreed on them, and there was no dissent, and da da da. The company that was in charge of the payments had actually said, no, we mustn't pay this, that we need an investigation into this. So then they, when they heard about this, that, you know, their name is being dragged through the mud, they went to Eskom and said, we are going to take you to court for lying about us. And Eskom was forced to admit in a press statement that, yes, we did pay 500 million. 500 million. You and I are sitting here making little, you know, something small
that's
with
a
spaza shop. 500 million. Now, I want to tell you, how many guys could have applied to start new businesses with that money? You could have reinvigorated this.
You could have built almost four Nkandlas.
Exactly. There you go. And if you'd used proper pricing, you'd have built 10. So, you know. So what's going to happen? My issue in this country is that we are in a no-consequence zone where the person who has to take action is Lynn Brown.
Right.
Lynn Brown's PA was in Dubai at the same time as Tom Moyane from SARS, at the same time as Des van Rooyen, Weekend Special, at the same time as Ace Magashule's two sons, at the same time as Duduzane Zuma, at the same time as the three Gupta brothers in December 2015. She tells us that she was sick and had to go and sit there. I'm sorry. Minister Lynn Brown is as implicated as so many other people in this whole thing, the state capture thing. And nothing is happening to them. So now she becomes an activist. She's running around. I want Eskom to answer within 48 hours and tell me why they lied about the Eskom trillion payment. Well, she should have acted a long time ago.
Right.
She hasn't. She's been Minister of Public Enterprises for more than 3 years. Has she done anything? No. So there's a fundamental problem here, and it's consequent. No one goes to jail. No one gets arrested. No one is even charged. You have a situation now where OUTA, an NGO, started to fight for the e-tolls. It's now laying charges, doing criminal investigation. It's laid charges against Museveni, Zwane and others because the state is failing in its job.
But Justice, I mean, you got very angry with me the other day when I said that there are so many incompetent women, and this does women in government, it does women in powerful positions, it does South African women generally a huge amount of ill.
Yeah.
But here's Lynn Brown, yet another example of incompetence at that level. And it is Women's Month. And then I hear the Minister of Women, because we're the only country in the world, I think, that has an actual ministry just dedicated to women and children and people with disabilities.
Yeah.
They throw them all together because, of course, they have everything in common. But Susan Shabangu, who, of course, doesn't have a great track record herself, having been, what was she before?
Minerals.
That's right. It was during Marikana, which, of course, we know is an ugly mark on the history of this country. But putting all of that aside, Susan says, and language does matter, Justice. The words we use matter.
Absolutely.
She says, gender-based violence is not a crisis. It's just a challenge. A challenge is, You wake up in the morning, you can't decide whether you're going to have all bran flakes or Rice Krispies. It's challenging. A crisis is you have neither all bran flakes nor Rice Krispies and you can't eat, and that's been the case for 18 days.
You know, there are two issues there, Gareth, but there are two issues, and I think they're important. So the first one is, you know, when you raised the point the other week, and you're right, the problem here is that Jacob Zuma has gone out of his way to put people in that cabinet who are absolutely incompetent, will do what he says, and will not think for themselves. So one of the biggest problematic areas about Jacob Zuma and his cabinet, his massive cabinet of 34 people plus another 35 deputies, is that it's like me saying, you know what, I'm going to have a braai at my house on Sunday, invite my friends. Now, my friends might be incompetent, but they are my friends. So they just come, they pitch, justice is friend. So that's what he's done. So, Susan Chabang, Batabile Dlamini. I mean, that person wouldn't be scooping dog poop at the park. She wouldn't be able to do it. But yeah, there you go. Anyway, so mediocrity is the signature of the Jacob Zuma administration and cabinet, and it's.
I wouldn't even see mediocrity, because mediocrity is like Lindiwe Sisulu does a reasonably okay job. By Angie's standards, she passes. Yeah. It doesn't mean that everyone in the country has suddenly got houses.
Exactly.
And how do you perform in a stupid ministry like sport? How do you perform? What are you required to do? How would we measure a good sports minister versus a bad one? Because it's an unnecessary and ridiculous ministry.
Exactly. It's things you should do, but you don't have to dedicate the whole ministry. No. But so I just think you need to be careful about Jacob Zuma, because he'll give a lot of great women a bad name, because by dint of association, he's already started stripping them of their dignity.
But this thing about the situation women face not being a crisis, this is a very poor move.
It's words matter, and it says it doesn't matter to me when you use words like that. So for me, I think this is the last day of Women's Month. But I think if there's anything we've learned in this country, is that, my word, you know, when you think that you have allies, you think that the ANC Women's League will stand up and say, Mduduzi Manana, the deputy minister who beat up a woman, should go. But then they say, no, he's going nowhere. And they actually stand up and say to Jacob Zuma, don't get rid of him. Credit to him. I think he forced him out. But my word, that is just,
well,
sad.
Irony of ironies. Grace Mugabe goes back to Zimbabwe. Her first public statement after arriving back in Zimbabwe is a thing about how women shouldn't be abused.
I know.
She doesn't have an appreciation for irony.
No, there's just words. It's a speech. You know, people think I'm giving a speech. Mm-hmm. And so it means standing up and talking rubbish. The words matter. What do you stand up and say? People haven't come to see you stand up.
You make a living out of words.
And these people are abusing words every day. It's shocking. It's incredible. But it's happening. Anyway, on that note, the point about Women's Month is that we've seen some horrific things. But let's not forget that those are just the tip of the iceberg. And so words like, this is not a crisis. When out of 4,000 women who are raped, only probably 400 get to conviction. It makes you want to weep. Anyway.
Yeah, it's a sad note to end Women's Month on, but thank you very much, Justice. We will check in with you next week, The Burning Platform.
Absolutely, and there'll be lots to talk about. Jacob Zuma on the 5th, I think that there's...
Tuesday.
On the 5th, the EFF's case for him to be impeached goes to, I think, the Concorde, one of the courts. I'm not sure if it's the Concorde. And I think we need to talk about this economy at some point because, you know, businesses are shutting down. People are out on the streets. And Jacob Zuma is busy with his sons shouting at Pravin Gordhan and not doing anything about the economy.
I've spoken to three people who run their own businesses in the last 2 weeks, and all three of them said this is the first time in 10 years that they have not paid tax. And that's because they're making a loss, not a profit.
Yes.
Three separate businesses in three separate sectors.
Now, if only President Zuma and his cabinet were making the link, 17 million people on social welfare, and you're not getting businesses,
Give us a chance to give you something to steal.
Exactly. There will be two... Anyway.
All right. Thank you, Justice.
Absolute pleasure.
This is CliffCentral.com.